Research shows one out of every five times a person opens his or her mouth, out comes a lie. And 80% of all lies go undetected. River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Our guest this hour is deception detection expert Janine Driver. Driver worked 16 years for the Department of Justice. She's trained thousands of law enforcement agents in the art and science of deciphering fact from fiction. She'll share common myths about lying and tell how to sharpen our inner lie detector. Her new book is called You Can't Lie to Me. Tell us about a notable lie or liar in your life. Right after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Research shows one out of every five times a person opens his or her mouth, out pops a lie. 80% of all lies go undetected. Now, what if you could sharpen your inner lie detector to uncover the truth with any person in any situation, be it a spouse, a partner, your first date, an employee, a boss, a politician, friend, neighbor, or stranger? Knowing when people are lying to you and when they are being truthful, wouldn't that be a tremendous advantage to have? Our guest this hour is lie detection expert Janine Driver. Driver spent 16 years as an investigator with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the ATF, and in her career, she's trained thousands of law enforcement agents in the art and science of deciphering fact from fiction. Her first book, You Say More Than You Think, focused on body language and was a New York Times bestseller, translated into 14 languages. Her new book is called You Can't Lie to Me. In it, she reveals the techniques used by law enforcement agencies to detect when a person is lying and gives instructions on how to develop an inner lie detector. She joins us by phone for the hour. Janine Driver, welcome to River to River.
I'm glad to be here, Ben. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, and we want to have our listeners chip in this hour with their questions, but also you can tell us about a notable lie or liar in your life, the consequences it had. We are not interested in having you name names, but we are interested in the stories, the consequences, perhaps the lessons learned from it about our topic. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Janine, a little later I want to have you share how a little bit about you, what you call your BS barometer, how to get that working. But first, tell us more of the research. I named a couple of things in the introduction there. Research that reveals to us more about the nature of lying and liars that may surprise us, and tell us what's at stake.
You know, and you had said it, is that we lie one out of five social situations. College kids lie one out of eight social situations. Infidelity in the United States of America for men over the age of 60 has doubled in the last 5 to 10 years. Infidelity for women over the age of 60 has tripled in the last decade in this country. And I think that when you drop these statistics, like you lie at one out of five or one out of three if you're a college kid, I think you would agree that it seems like the odds are against us, right?
Right.
But most people will often say, well, I don't lie. Mm. You know, I haven't lied since I stole a Twix candy bar out of a grocery store when I was six and my mother made me return it to the manager or police officer standing in the store. I just came back a week ago. I did a show with Anderson Cooper. He has a daytime show called Anderson Live. They had written an ad, and it said, if you are Anderson Cooper's biggest fan, you have a piece of pasta that looks like Anderson, or you sleep with a picture that looks like Anderson, please write into the show. Are you his biggest fan? Have you seen all of his shows? 24 people wrote in. They interviewed 24 people, and all 24 people lied, 100% lied. They were asked, tell me which of these following three shows was your favorite and why. The family that lived with the tambourine gang, the family that lived with gorillas, or the family that lived on a space shuttle. And people would be like, oh, space shuttle. I love that episode. I'm really into space. Or the tambourine family. Oh, it's so funny how Anderson blushed when the tambourine family came out. And they were all made up shows, 100%, 24 people lied. Hmm. What happens is this, Ben, we focus on the reward and not the consequence. That's why people of power can lie with ease. A parent can tell their kid there's Santa, an Easter bunny, a tooth fairy. A boss or a Bernie Madoff can take money from people and justify it. When we justify it, we then think we don't lie.
Okay, so we're thinking about what we want to achieve and not whether it's a lie or not. And we do these things in a sort of second nature so that we don't learn that we don't recognize that they are lies. But there are different types of lies. There are harmful lies and less harmful lies. What are the types?
Right. There's a spectrum of lies. There's what's called pro-social, and at the other end of the spectrum, anti-social. A pro-social lie is you pay money in someone's meter because you see a meter clerk is coming to give that person a ticket, a complete stranger. You get nothing from it. It is something you're doing to help a complete stranger or help someone. My mother is fighting breast cancer, and it's not really great. Stage 4 breast cancer. In the next 10 days, she's going to lose her hair again for the second time in the last couple of years. She'll lose her hair for the rest of her life now. If my mother says to you, what kind of head do you think I have? Do I look ridiculous bald? You might lie and say, your hair and your head, you have the perfect head for a bald person. You look gorgeous. You should be a yoga instructor. Throw some loop earrings on. You look great. Those are pro-social lies, what people might call a white lie. The other end are anti-social lies. These are bullies. These are adult bullies, teen bullies. These are people who just make up a rumor, a lie, just to cause pain for somebody else. And then in the middle, we have what's called a selfish lie or self-enhancement. Selfish lies are lies you tell that help you and hurt someone else. But a self-enhancement lie is a lie you tell that doesn't hurt someone else but does help you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it depends on the spectrum. Whether you're lying on a resume, lying on a resume would be a selfish lie. It does help you, but it could hurt someone else. It's hurting the person who's the better candidate for the job. It's hurting the company because they're hiring someone that's not qualified. We saw that with Tony. We saw that with the guy in charge of FEMA, the man in charge of FEMA, when everything fell apart in
Brownie.
New Orleans. Yes. So, what's his name?
Well, George Bush called him Brownie, right? Way to go, Brownie.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. So what happened with him, you know, he's in charge of FEMA, but guess what happened? He had lied on his resume back in his 20s. He had said that he had been a professor at a school where he was merely just an intern. He said he was an award-winning professor. He was just an intern somewhere else. He said he was a leader in this another university or another company, and again, he had lied. His resume had been fictitious from the young age, you know, when he was in his 20s, and it just carried on and on and on. And once those lies are out there, I mean, think of Tiger Woods. You know, this book, You Can't Lie to Me, is about fixing and keeping your legacy as positive as it possibly can be. Tiger Woods, when he cheated on his wife, his kids will forever be known as the kids of the great golfer Tiger Woods, who also cheated on his wife, had unprotected sex with hookers. You know, you got to be careful on your legacy. So for me, I say this book opens up this world, and I want to pour and dump a bunch of love inside of it and make sure you're surrounding yourself with the right kinds of people. Is your son's coach who you think he is? Is your husband making flirty text messages? Let's stop it at flirty text messages before an affair happens, before your kids start having unprotected sex, before your child starts becoming a smoker. So let's make smart decisions before there's too much damage done.
Our guest this hour, deception detection expert Janine Driver, her new book, You Can't Lie to Me. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Perhaps you have a story of a liar or lying. We're not interested in names, just the story, the consequences, the lessons learned, perhaps. Janine, in this book, you have lying myths, a number of things we associate with lying that are not necessarily true. Tell us about some of the ones that stand out for you there.
You know, it's interesting. We think that people who lie will say or quite a bit. Where were you last night? My friends and I, we were, be careful of that. We saw and heard with Scott Peterson, who was found guilty of murdering his wife, Lacey Peterson, and their unborn son, Connor. He ummed and erred when he was telling the truth. But because he's such a master manipulator, he knows that when people lie, they tend to and err. So when he actually lied, his ums and ers disappear. They actually leave his language because he's hyper-focused. What you need to do instead, the truth is, you have to get a baseline. When someone's baseline changes, that's what we call a hotspot. Once you hear that hotspot or see a hotspot now, you need to think like an FBI operative. You need to think like a detective. And that's really where due diligence comes in with asking powerful questions. So one of the myths there is that people who lie and err.
Another big popular myth we've heard in the last 10 years especially is based on something called neuro-linguistic programming, NLP. Neuro is our brain, linguistic is language, programming is our map of the world. NLP is amazing. It can change people's lives. You cannot use NLP in and of itself to detect deception. What I mean by that is this. People say, because if you're a typical right-handed person, if you look upper left, when you're talking to someone, your upper left, you're recalling, visually recalling. When you look upper right, you're visually creating. So if I said to you, Ben, describe your mother's face to me, and you look upper right, people who have studied under NLP who think you can use it for deception, they would say, aha, you're lying. I asked about your mother's face. You've seen your mother's face. You went upper right. You are a liar. Well, here, it's been scientifically proven and wrong in the last 5 years by many studies, including studies by Dr. Mark Frank out of formerly out of Rutgers University, up in SUNY New York now. And what they found out is, if I say describe your mother's face and you look upper right, maybe your brain is just picturing your mother's face floating in air. And because you've never just seen your mother's face all by itself floating in air, you go to visual construct. So you have to be careful about eye movements with detecting deception.
Well, tell us a little bit about what you call the BS barometer in your book. You've got five steps. Briefly take us through those steps and tell us when we should, how we should enhance our BS barometer and when we should use it.
Well, we begin with what is, first of all, the BS barometer, I believe we are born, it's a muscle. We are born with the ability to detect deception. We are born with the ability to communicate effectively with people. I believe our brain is programmed and primed to tell the truth. When we don't tell the truth, the words come out discombobulated and our body language changes, and I'll share some of that with you. So step one, our new normal has been to lie. So I'm recalibrating everyone's BS barometers with this book and with training. I'm doing a 50-day cross-country tour, going to libraries from one end of the country to the next, giving this information, helping people, giving them hugs and some love, and teaching them in person what I know, that I head out actually tomorrow, my 50-day tour. But essentially, step one is what's called baselining. I call it gathering intelligence. What is someone's normal cadence of speaking? Do they use their hands? Do they say, I swear to God, I swear to God, I swear to God? Is that part of their normal vocabulary? I swear to God, if it gets any hotter here today, I'm moving to Alaska. I swear to God, if the Red Sox don't win, I'm going to hate sports for the rest of my life. What is someone's normal baseline language and their baseline body language? Do they stand with their hands and their hips? Do their feet usually have what I call a short, fat candle stance? Are their feet more than 6 inches apart, a couple feet? Or are their feet next to each other, less than 6 inches apart, a tall, skinny candle? And you bump a table with a tall, skinny candle, these types of people tend to tip over. These are the people that we can kind of push around sometimes. What is someone's baseline behavior with their body, with their words? That's step one. Once you get that, that happens in less than 3 minutes. Once you get the baseline and gather intelligence, next where I take you in the book is what's called the wiretap. The wiretap is paying attention to someone's words. When Dick Cheney shot his friend Harry, actually Harry was just an acquaintance, first of all, was not actually a friend. When Dick Cheney shot Harry, he said this. Telling the truth, he said this. Ultimately, I'm the guy that pulled the trigger that fired the round that hit Harry. Let me repeat that. Ultimately, I'm the guy that pulled the trigger that fired the round that hit Harry.
What's he doing with that verbiage then?
This is creating distance from stress and drama. When we create unnecessary words, instead of saying, yeah, I shot him, it was a mistake. When we create all these words, we are pushing ourselves away from the incident. And here's a man telling the truth. Imagine how discombobulated liars become. Roger Clemens double-talked all the time up on the Hill when he was saying he didn't take steroids. He talked about Andy Pettit. Well, had I known then what I know now, which I hadn't known then, but I now know, had I knowed, I mean, it's unbelievable. When people lie, they'll get into this squishy language. We saw something very similar with the whole Facebook debacle. With Facebook, the founder of Facebook, he was hired by these two Winklevoss twins. Zuckerberg sent out an email. And one of the emails he sent out, and this was from Business Insider who published his email. One email he said, I just received about three of your voicemail messages. Now, you either received three or you didn't. I just received about is squishy language. It's what we call a hot spot. By the way, liars love the number three. There's only three of us. I only cheated three times. Mama, I only smoked a cigarette three different times in my life.
Talk about some of the body language that you see in lying. How can you distinguish that?
Right. So then we move on from the voice. Then we go into the face, what I call the stakeout, and then we do the full body surveillance. I'll give you one with the face. One is contempt, moral superiority. Contempt is a half a smile. It's a smirk where one part of our mouth is pulled up into the side. It's the only unilateral expression. We show it if we're 777, born in Zimbabwe, Iran, Iowa. It shows up the same way on our faces. It doesn't matter our color of our skin or our religion. Contempt is moral superiority. Everyone who does contempt is not lying, but certainly people who lie, who are justifying their lie, will lead contempt. We saw that with A-Rod when he was lying to Katie Couric about taking steroids, came out a year later, came clean. We see that with, you know, some of the more arrogant people, Drew Peterson, who was just found guilty of murdering one of his wives. We'll see that with these people, what I call the convinced not conveyors. Convinced not conveyors will suddenly put their hands on their hips. They'll suddenly take up space. They'll jut up their chin. They might do what I call gaslighting you. As they take up space, they'll say, you're so paranoid. It's pathetic. Your only friend is your mother, and it's ridiculous. You're so jealous. I should start cheating on you. This is what we call gaslighting. It's from an old movie a long time ago where there was treasure in a house, and a husband wanted to make his wife think she was crazy so she'd leave and he could get all the treasure. He would blow out the gaslight. And when people gaslight you, be careful. Oftentimes we think when someone raises their tone and pitch of voice, they're angry. But 50% of the time, it's fear.
Let me jump in right here because I think I have a good example that we all know of gaslighting. Let's see if you agree. I want to play a clip of one of the most notable lie-related quotes from the world of politics, Janine. Here's President Bill Clinton, and you'll know this clip, of course, speaking before the press at the height of the Lewinsky scandal. This is in January of 1998. Should we just listen to this, or do you want to tell us what to listen for?
I'd love to listen to it. I know it, of course.
Yeah, yes. Tell us what to listen for.
Well, Bill Clinton's going to say, I did not have sexual relations with that woman. When he says that, first of all, he says that woman, which is distancing language. When we hear that woman, the girl, if I killed the child, someone might say, and their child is missing. This is distancing language. I did not have sexual relations with that woman. And Bill Clinton actually subtly nods his head yes here. He suddenly nods his head yes up and down when he says he didn't have sex with that woman. Then he says, and I never told anyone to lie. Never. Not a single time. Never. Instead of saying never, 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 it's overselling. Truthful people just simply say no, or they say something once. Say never three times. It's what we call a major hotspot. So
let's listen to this. This is Bill Clinton from January of 1998.
But I want to say one thing to the American people. I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false. And I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
Okay, Bill Clinton from 1998. Gaslighting is what you call that, Janine.
Well, gaslighting is, yeah, because he doesn't take any questions after that. It's very interesting. When Bill Clinton nods and said yes, it was as if he was saying to us, America, I'd like to have more sexual relations with that woman. He's saying the opposite with his head. He's literally nodding his head yes. And he's doing something suspicious here. He's pointing in one direction while he actually is speaking in another. And when I do my keynote presentations across the country to corporate America or associations, I'll go into the audience and I'll say, I need to see you after the program. And I'll point to my right and look to my left. Again, we're looking for that disconnect when it comes to separating fact from fiction and protecting your friends, your family, and your finances.
Let's go to a caller before we have to take a break. Let's go to Jim, who's listening in Spencer. What's on your mind, Jim?
Well, I think people need to be, you know, well-educated in any of these techniques. And I think the biggest problem that typical American needs to be concerned about is, you know, running into a situation where, you know, you have, an assistant to the county attorney or police officer doing investigations, and they have a few lame tools that they didn't really pay too much attention to, and some educational setting where the instructor wasn't all that well up on techniques. And then, you know, these are people that have the ability to really cause a lot of grief for the innocent because, you know, they're using a few little tricks to try and absolutely decide on their own that this guy has to be lying. You know, it's just a dangerous situation.
Well, Jim, unless you had a question, we'll get a comment on that, because Janine has trained thousands of law enforcement agents in lie
detection. I'm sure she has, but, you know, she hasn't trained everybody. There's a lot of amateurs out here, you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
I wish I could get out there to all of you. Listen, I think that you're right, because you get a little information, and that's one of the beautiful things about my book, You Can't Lie to Me, is I've set it up in a self-help format where every chapter builds on the last chapter, and so I literally have you doing exercises. I created a BS Barometer app for free where people can watch videos. They watch a baseline video and then a second video and a third video, and they have to decide which one is full of BS, video A or B, after they see that baseline, to train people. And unfortunately, in law enforcement and in the academic community, people who get a little bit of information, they become a mind reader. If I said, if you've ever cheated on your wife and your shoulder shrugs, people who don't know what I know will say, aha, a shoulder shrug is uncertainty, which it is, and a shoulder shrug is uncertainty, therefore you've cheated, because you said, no, you didn't cheat, but you shrugged. So perhaps the reason I shrugged is because I know my best friend, Michelle, is cheating on her husband, Stephen. Or perhaps I shoulder shrug because my father cheated on my mother. Or my husband cheated on me. A shoulder shrug, anytime the verbal is not consistent with the nonverbal, all it means is there's an increase in cognitive thinking and there is something I'm not telling you. A lot of people make the mistake of not doing due diligence and asking powerful questions. This book is set up to get people to tell you the truth, not for you to be a mind reader.
Are there interesting in your book, and very quickly, we have to take a break here in a few seconds, but you say we are all born liars. How early in life do we start to lie?
We start lying as little teeny babies, where we cry and hope for our mother to come, and when she comes, then we ignore her and we look away. Or as we get even a little older and we get into, like, you know, eight months, 12 months, you'll play with a toy, mom will take it away, and you act like you don't care, and the baby will turn away. Or eventually the kids, as they're getting a little older, they'll look right at mom and dad, these little babies, as they're doing something, some type of mischief. They'll look at mom and dad as they're doing the mischief. They're keeping eye contact for you don't look at the, you know, the magic that's happening on the table. And then kids will even hide behind a couch. You know, my mother laughed when she said, well, that's not lying, that's cute. And it is cute when a baby does it. But you know what? Adults do the same exact thing. We're hiding. We're looking at someone saying one thing when we're really doing something different behind their back.
Okay, we want to talk about, in coming up the next half hour, certainly advice for parents, because, Janine, I imagine a big area for you people want to know about is when their children are lying, teens and so forth, to keep them safe and so forth, to know what's going on. And we know teens do. Are sparing with the truth at some time. We'll come back in just a moment. We're going to give Janine a call back, actually, try to get a little better line here. Deception detection expert Janine Driver is with us, author of the New York Times bestseller, You Say More Than You Think. Her latest is You Can't Lie to Me. And we'll be back in just a few minutes. Hopefully, call or question from you, 1-866-780-9100. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, all about lies today. Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and that's no lie. Deception detection expert with us this hour, Janine Driver, author of the New York Times bestseller, You Say More Than You Think, also author of her latest book, You Can't Lie to Me. Janine spent 16 hours as an investigator with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. She's trained thousands of law enforcement agents in lie detection, and we're fielding your questions about liars and lying this hour. Also, if you'd like to share a notable lie or liar in your life, the consequences that it had, we'd like to have you do that. Not interested in any names, but just the story and the consequences it had. 1-866-780-9100, river-to-river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Janine, are you ready to take our first call?
I'm ready to take it.
Okay, let's go to Doug in Urbandale. Hi, Doug.
Hi. My question is kind of goes to the extreme of pathological liars. And the question I always had is, how do you approach this person because you know it's really disrupting their life? And I'll give a couple quick examples. There's a group of us guys when we were younger, all lived in Chicago, and you know, at least four or five of them in an apartment, and big group that hung out. One was always really a pathological liar, and I always felt like I should write a letter anonymously or something. But to give you an example, now we're all in 50 or very early 50s, and recently one of us, we hadn't seen him for years, got a hold of him and said, you know, what have you been doing the last few years and so on. And he came up with this story that he had been hired by Blackwater to straighten stuff out in Iraq and so on when they had that shoot. And the stories are funny and you can't help but laugh, but it's sad. And because his last known job was just working for a beer distributor. So, you know, obviously Blackwater wouldn't hire him, but he could lie because he could get details that were probably even a little more than the average person.
Right.
And again, just recently for the Iowa State game this weekend, he said he was going to come, but he was going to fly in on an airplane that he had just gotten from his dad passing away and so on. So our bet amongst all the guys was, how, what's his lie going to be to not make it here? So okay. Anyway, obviously he didn't show up, and he said it was a funeral of a friend and so on. But so how do you send an anonymous letter? What do you do?
Okay, great question. And also, how are chronic or pathological liars made, Janine, and what to do in Doug's case?
Well, first of all, it's difficult to bust a liar in a lie if they begin to believe the lie. So we have, like, psychopaths or sociopaths, like the Scott Petersons of the world or the Urian Devandersloos, who most likely killed Natalie Holloway. It's really tough to catch them up. How you can really trip up a liar who has practiced lying their whole entire life. They are a psychopath. They're hard to bust. But a great question is a how question, like a sense of being. When Natalie Holloway first went missing and Urian Devandersloos couldn't get on television enough, he was asked all these questions. He lied pretty well. You know, he's focusing on the payoff here instead of focusing on the punishment. And so guess what happens? And they have that sense of power. You know, power decreases cortisol. When we lie, we have an increase in cortisol, which is the stress hormone. But when we are in a position of power, that decreases cortisol. So it's this homeostasis that we actually end up in if you're a person of power, which Urian Devandersloos was very connected to the community. But a great question there was how. How was Natalie when you last saw her? He stumbles and stammers, and he leaks a lot of deception. He eventually answers, she was walking along the water. Well, that's not a how question. That's what was she doing. That's a what. We saw the same thing or heard the same thing with Scott Peterson. Scott Peterson was asked, how was your wife when you last saw her? How was Lacey when you last saw her? And he stammers and stutters, and then he says, oh, well, she was in the living room wrapping Christmas presents, which is really sad because he was probably in the living room wrapping her because he had wrapped her with a duct tape. And it's really sad, but how questions can catch them off. These types of master manipulators and liars who lie all the time, they literally feel more comfortable in the lie than in the truth, just to let you know. They literally feel more comfortable. And you can catch them by asking them a stupid detail. Like if they say, you know, he says about the funeral, you can say something super esoteric like, oh, well, what kind of salad dressing did they serve on the salads there?
What if, Janine, I think in Doug's sense, what I'm getting from Doug is this is a friend. This is one in their group, and they'd like him not to do this anymore and to point out how damaging it is to his circle of friends. How do you gently, perhaps you can't do it gently,
I'm gonna tell you two things.
Yeah.
Number one, I'm not a therapist. I'm not a psychologist. I learned body language to stay alive while putting gun dealers who sold guns in an illegal fashion out a back door to bad people. I put them in jail. I take what psychologists have learned, and I used it to stay alive. So I'm not a psychologist. With that being said, be very cautious on confronting them. I have a person in my life that I'm very close with who is also a compulsive liar, incredibly close to this person. And what I simply said to this person is I said, you know what? I love you more with the truth than I do with the lies. I love you more with the truth. And I love you exactly how you are. And you know what? Does it stop the lies? It might not. They've lied forever. They grew up that way. They literally feel more comfortable with the lie. Be cautious on confronting your friend. You know, Mark Hacking lied to his wife and said he got accepted to medical school. She calls the medical school. They're literally moving from one state to another. She calls the medical school to find out great places to live. Finds out not only has he not been accepted to medical school there, but he had never even applied. She confronted him, and he snapped and killed her. So you need to be careful how you confront it. I would definitely talk to a psychologist or a psychiatrist. What is the best approach to confronting him? Because if you confront him on your own, you don't know what happens in fight or flight when the whole mirage, the whole smokescreen is brought down. It could be very dangerous. People, that's why smart people do stupid things. Their blood leaves their what's called the neocortex, the spaghetti part of your brain. It leaves the neocortex, passes the mammalian part of our brain, and goes right back to the reptilian brain, which is fight and survival. So be careful. Someone that you love very dearly, by confronting them in the lie, they could literally attack.
Okay, our guest is deception detection expert, Janine Driver. Her new book, You Can't Lie to Me, 1-866-780-9100. Amanda, writing in on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page, writes, someone in my life, who is thankfully out of it now, was a compulsive liar, truly diagnosed, and he would lie for the thrill of lying, from benign subjects to truly damaging and hurtful ones. 4 years later, it is still difficult for me to trust not only others, but my own ability to determine the truth. If you have had someone really damage your life, Janine, by lying, perhaps compulsively, perhaps not, you are. How do you recover from that so that you don't look at everybody in the world as liars and swing too far from too trusting, perhaps too gullible, to the other extreme where you're very suspicious of everyone?
Yeah, I say, well, a couple things. Number one, if you get her information, I'll send you a free copy of my book. I'll autograph it, and you can send it to her so she can get some peace of mind. And the best types of people who can detect deception are actually trustworthy people. People who trust people are better at detecting deception than people who are suspicious of people. The reason being, when you're suspicious of people, you're worried about getting hurt or lied or manipulated. What happens is you will get manipulated by people who are very charming. There's a great book out there as well called The Gift of Fear by Gavin DeBecker. And Gavin DeBecker, who's been on Oprah, he's been all over the place, what he talks about is when someone is charming, look at charm as a weapon they are using. Now, I'm a charming person. I did stand-up comedy in my 20s. I'm from Boston. I've got the gift to gab. I just love people's stories. I'm motivated by fun and freedom, so I'm pulled towards human beings. I'm a charming person, but you have to say to yourself, why is this person trying to charm me? Look at charm as a tool. And literally, you know, I'm sorry that that happened. It's not an easy journey when you've been deceived, but to be really healthy and surround yourself with honest people, you have to focus on the positive, and you have to find authentic, real people. I'd love to send her a copy of my book to give her that peace of mind.
Let's have some advice here. We have a few minutes left of the program for parents, because parents want to know what's up in their children's lives. They have responsibility for them, also teens. What advice do you have for parents in detecting lying in their children, and also perhaps detecting someone who has a real problem with lying, who is a young person?
I think the biggest mistake we make as parents is, we do a couple. Number one, we give them too much evidence. We'll say, I found this pack of cigarettes in your pants. It's better to not do that. It's called SUE, S-U-E, strategic use of evidence. Law enforcement, we know about SUE techniques, strategic use of evidence. And I outline that, of course, in the book. But essentially what it is you wouldn't say, I found the pack of cigarettes. You would instead say, because now you only have a small amount of information, you would say to your son, is there any reason why you wouldn't want me looking through your pockets of your clothes? Is there something you'd like to get off your chest about something you had in one of your pockets? Because now you might find out there's a condom in there. Or now you might find out there was a joint in there, some marijuana. Be careful on giving too much evidence too quickly. Another big mistake, the second biggest mistake we make, and I'm a mother myself, is saying, whatever you do to me, don't lie. Don't lie to me. We don't hear the word don't. So what you've primed your child to do is to lie to you. Instead, what I teach law enforcement and I teach moms around America is simply say, tell me the truth. Whether you tell me the truth or you don't tell me the truth, we don't hear the word don't. So pause after don't. You've now said, tell me the truth two times. Whether you tell me the truth or you don't tell me the truth, I love you no matter what.
Bernie Madoff, a big name in lying, caught in December 2008, having made $65 billion in fictitious investments, 5,000 client accounts suffered there. Iowa has its own Bernie Madoff-type figure, the Peregrine Financial Group's founder, Russell Wassendorf, involved in misappropriating some $200 million from some 24,000 customers. How do such people pull off such big lies over years and years without being caught?
As I mentioned earlier, power, you know, literally power corrupts. There was a study that was done where they put different groups of people. One group of people were put in offices with windows. The other group were put in front of computers and cubicles. They were told that a message will come up on their computer and they can act on it. And the message said, in one of the books on your desk is $100. Please take it and lie. Or if you don't take it, lie. And what they found out is in a study where you're just pretending to be a boss because you're sitting in an office with a desk with the window, those people exhibited no signs of stress, no increased heart rate, no body language, or no verbal tells of deception. The people at the cubicles, they were doing shoulder shrugs, they were doing hand shrugs, they were leaking contempt, their breath was increasing, their belly button was turning and facing a door and exit, which subconsciously sends the signal, we want out of there. I call this naval intelligence. The people in the cubicles exhibited stress, but the people with perceived power, they don't even have it, perceived power showed no signs of deception.
Mm-hmm. So
the Bernie Madoffs of this world, there's a decrease in their cortisol because of this high they get from the power.
Right. So are there people out there that you have run across, perhaps, who are almost impossible to detect as liars, neurobiologically speaking?
You know, here's the deal. There has to be something in it for both of you. And I have a chart in the book. What's your emotional investment? You know, if you are the level 10 emotional investment, that's like a surgeon operating on their 6-year-old kid and like literally operating on their own child. So if you're so emotionally invested with getting the truth, you're not going to see the truth, unfortunately. You're going to see what you want to see. Now, the opposite end, if someone steals your pen, you know, and that's a level 1 or a level 2 and a level of 1 to 10 of stress and emotional investment for you, you're not going to bust someone with a pen. If I sit next to someone on a plane and he tells me he's married or not married, I might not bust him. Why? Because I don't really care if he's married or not. I don't cheat, and I don't really care. If he tells me he met his wife on Match.com, I don't really care. So there has to be an emotional investment for the liar. They have to have something to lose, and there has to be an emotional investment for me. So now when I go on television and I play these games with Anderson Cooper or Donnie Deutsch on The Big Idea, or I flew out and did a show out in Texas, where I have to bust people on a lie, what I do is I have to give them a consequence. I have to get them emotionally engaged, because if I don't, I'll never bust them in a lie.
Here's Barbara in Ames. Barbara, welcome.
Hello, thank you. My question is this. I have had some very scurrilous people in my life say, trust me. So I have given them my trust, and they've done me in. Is trust me always a big danger sign?
Now, I would be careful. Now, someone might say trust me all the time, so it could be their baseline. So you're always checking for a deviation in their baseline. If they never say trust me, then if they never say it and they suddenly say it, yes, that's a hot spot. And I would say, is there any reason why? And fill in the blank. Is there any reason why? I feel like you're trying to oversell me about this opportunity. You know, is there any reason why? I feel like there's something you're not sharing with me. And at that point, it's really when you ask that question that the truth will reveal itself on how they respond to you asking. I call it confrontation light. It is confrontation, but is there any reason why? Or maybe I'm wrong here, but it seems to me there's something you're not telling me. Mm-hmm. And then do what I call WAIT, W-A-I-T, which stands for why am I talking? In other words, say what your question is. Maybe I'm wrong here, but it seems to me you're trying to convince me about something here. And then say nothing. I promise you, they will speak twice. A liar has to speak twice because they want to make sure you are believing them. A truthful person will say it once and then look at you like, what's the problem?
Mm. Thank you.
Barbara, thank you for that call from Ames.
It. Bye.
Barbara's case brings up a question. Shouldn't we be completely trusting, though, of those in our lives who we feel have earned it? Or do we still have a detector going there as well?
Hey, listen, I worked with a management company that was doing my corporate bookings for 4.5 years. The president of that company traveled with me for 4.5 years. She was a family friend. She's a single mother. I gave her daughter money when she went to college. I treated her and her daughter like family, and I've trained the CIA and FBI. And when I started to put this book together, the last chapter is what I call postpartum. It's checking in with the lies we tell ourselves and proving that the people that we think have earned our trust are still worthy of our trust. Because circumstances change. You know, Dane Cook, the comedian, his own brother embezzled $10 million from him. So people we trust, you have to check in on your cousin who's managing your grandmother or your nana's bank account. You know, just check in. Do due diligence. We're human. We make mistakes. And this woman I had worked with for 4.5 years, when I wrote that last chapter, I say make a list of people you trust implicitly and prove yourself right. Prove that you still should be trusting them and they're still worthy of your trust. And when I did that, I asked some questions, and what I found out was in the last 12 to 18 months, she had embezzled thousands of dollars from me. When her daughter was going to college, she didn't have the finances. There's what's called a fraud triangle. Fraud triangle is you have access to money, you have a change in your financial circumstances where there's financial duress, and now the last part of the fraud triangle is you can justify it. Mm-hmm. What she was saying to herself is, oh, it's only $1,000, I'll pay it back. Oh, it's only $1,800, I'll pay it back with the next check. So be careful of trusting people for the rest of your life. Trust them and do a little spot check once in a while to prove yourself right.
Janine Driver, you share an interesting story in your book because when people find out what you do for a living, there are some interesting reactions. You tell a story in your book of a man who challenged you, Gabe the reporter. Would you give us that story, please?
Well, my husband can't believe I wrote that story in there. It was New Year's Eve. My husband's Scottish. His name is Leif Erik Larsson. He's Scandinavian and Scottish, and he wore the kilt at our wedding, and he wears a kilt this one night. We were at a New Year's Eve party in Washington, D.C., and he was getting a lot of attention. And a reporter, who's a very prominent reporter, comes up and starts talking to my husband about the kilt. And we start chatting, and he says to me, so you can tell people are lying? You're a body language and detecting deception expert? And my husband goes, yeah, they call her the lion tamer, L-Y-I-N, because she could tell if you're lying. He goes, ask me anything. And I ask him a couple questions first to get his baseline that, you know, my niece was getting her first bike or whatever it was to get his baseline behavior. He didn't realize the game had already begun. I'm watching him. I'm listening to his word choices, his cadence, his body language. And then I said, as his girlfriend comes closer, she was not a part of the conversation. I asked when the girlfriend came over, now, is this your girlfriend? He said, yes. I go, have you ever cheated on her? And he stammers and stutters, and his belly button turns and faces the door and exit. His pants begin to get on fire because he doesn't know if he should lie or tell the truth. And he ultimately told the truth. What he said was this. He goes, I don't cheat on her because we don't have an exclusive agreement, and I travel a lot. So, you know, I'm not here all the time. And she goes, what do you mean we don't have an exclusive agreement? Are you having sex while you travel? Here's this reporter. And they broke up that night, to say the least. And my husband, I'm not a party favor people like to bring if there's people cheating or have something to hide. Don't invite me to be your dinner guest.
Janine, I wonder, we often romanticize really exceptional liars, exceptional con artists. We think of movies like, oh, The Sting, Paper Moon, or more recently, Catch Me If You Can with Leonardo DiCaprio. Is that part of the problem, that we have a romantic affinity for people who can amaze us much the way a magician amazes us?
I find it interesting. I do body language classes. I have a class, how to have a date 6 nights a week if you want, how to read people in 5 minutes or less. My clients are like Procter & Gamble and Coca-Cola. I use body language for sales, and those classes are packed. I just came back from Chicago. I spoke to 3,000 people for an amazing company called Anytime Fitness, just incredibly amazing human beings. And I do a class called The Truth About Lying and Detecting Deception. I'm lucky if I can get 20, 30 people in there. I think on TV, we love to glorify and see it. And I think when I do my classes, at the end of the day, people are afraid to really know what's going on. I think we're doing the best that we can. And many of us say, I can't take one more thing because I'm going to snap. You know, I'm a single mother, or I'm a single woman, or I'm unemployed. I mean, we're doing the best we can. I think sometimes people are fearful of knowing the truth in their lives, so we can escape to a reality when we see the catch me if you cans of the world. It's I don't know. I don't know what happens with us, but I do know that my classes on detecting deception are not as full as all the super cool stuff with sales and marketing.
Interesting. So it takes two to tango. There are the liars, and there are the people who don't want to know the truth, and it takes both.
It does. I think that, I think that we say we want to know the truth, but I tell my husband, I go, listen, if you ever cheat on me, you better live with that secret to the day you die. Because if I find out, then you're going to live on the couch of a best friend's house because you're not going to be in my life. And, at the end of the day, do you really want to know? I mean, I think for me, I do. As a mother, I want to know that my son, he's only 7, but I want to know he's making smart choices. I want to know that he is where he says he is. And I want to know that the teacher and the school bus driver and the coach who are watching him, I want to know that they're worthy of my trust and worthy of my, you know, watching over and protecting my son. And I think a big mistake we make as parents is when we go into the school systems, we're on a cell phone or we're text messaging, please leave your phone in the car and look your teachers and the coaches in the eyes. Look them in the eyes. The last thing you want to do is what's called body blocking or eye blocking.
We have to go,
Master
Janine.
Manipulators. Yeah, well, that's the deal. So you can't lie to me if you want to know how to do it.
You
then,
can't lie to me is
you know,
the title.
Check it out.
Janine Driver's latest book, Deception Detection Expert Janine Driver, You Can't Lie to Me. Thank you for joining us this hour, Janine.
Thanks for having me.
River to River is produced by Jeff Schmidt, Catherine Perkins, and Emily Woodbury. Help today from Allison Sullivan. Technical support from Dennis Reese. Our theme music, it's usually here. Not this. This is a work by Scott Joplin. You figure out why it's there. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.